So pretty straightforward, nothing fancy. Anyway, that kind of helps you visualize. And we're still working on the floor plan here, but overall, we think we can work within pretty close to the square footage that we're looking at. And I think the dimensions on this footprint here are approximately 40 by 72. So that may vary a little bit once we finish up looking at all the various codes and making sure we got good traffic flows and stuff like that. And it gives you a pretty good rough idea of what we're looking at. Pretty simple. I think there's maybe a profile there too. It's just some basic profiles, but we're still working with the roof lines. What we're trying to do is minimize any snow dropping off the roof and pedestrian traffic ways and wind blocks and stuff like that for doors and of course fire escape routes and things like that. So hope to have more on that in the future. And and Ed has gratefully taken the lead on this. I asked him if he could fit it into his work schedule next year, and he's agreed to do it. And I think Ed's the right guy to help lead us on this project. So anyway, I want to just stop here. Spend a little bit of time because this is one of the larger ones, but I think the timing's right. Another thing is I think now more than ever we want to focus on bolstering in using local talent to do things, and this could certainly be a general contractor, could be a local contractor, and it might help the economy a little bit here next year as well. So I think there's some dual benefit in this project and performing it next year. We're not sure if we might try to do something like we did with the bunkhouse, or not the bunkhouse, but the crew quarters out at Swan Lake, where maybe there's a opportunity for a modular design or something like that. There's some benefits to that because they're constructed in a controlled environment and the building just doesn't get saturated before you go ahead and button it up. I never really liked that, but anyway, so we have a lot more work to do here. But I wanted to at least put a little meat on the bones for the board to see.
Mr. Chair, I have some questions with regard to this specific project, if that was okay.
Go ahead,
Sure.
Jeremy.
So, Trey, I've got a few questions for you. One of the questions revolves around cost. You said that you originally had looked at this as a larger facility, but you've downscaled it because of cost. Can you talk a little bit about what we're currently paying for space and what we get for that space versus what this particular space is going to cost us? I saw in the proposal it said our annual rent currently is $63,000 at the White Cliff building, but I believe that's only covering office space, doesn't cover any laydown or warehousing space. Can you talk a little bit to that?
Yeah, I can a little bit, and if I would say if you're going to construct a new building, it's not going to be, I'll say, cheaper than rent per se, but the office building here was always a temporary place to put the organization until we got our feet on the ground, got established. And, right now we've got some storage out at Marble Construction. We have consolidated some of that stuff. We also had rent this, the SEPA apartment. I think the highest value is, I mean, if you think about it, we've been in the building here already for like 11 years. So that's, let's call it 600,000. We could have been putting that into a SEPA asset and depreciating it over time as well. I think in we don't really have any lay down area to speak of. We got a place where we got some, we've actually moved some poles over to the lot there, but we've had some lay down area over at Marble, but we don't have a piece of equipment to get to our equipment, to our equipment or whatever's in the lay down area. We really don't have a warehouse area. We end up moving you know, we'll get a shipment of something in and we'll have to have somebody else, we'll have to hire a contractor to go pick it up and then store it somewhere else, stage it for the project. And it's really, really inefficient. This will just have some nuanced benefits that are sometimes it's hard to put dollars to just from purely efficiency for staging a project. So we'll have an indoor dry area to put some of that stuff in. We'll also be able to maintain a warehouse a little bit more effectively in here in town. Right now we've got it stuffed in connexes and the like. So I know I'm not getting quite to the nuts and bolts that you were hoping for, but as far as like a cost benefit analysis or something like that, but I think it goes a little bit beyond that.
Sure. And the next question I have is that you've, with downsizing the facility with the new design, will it lend to expansion in the future if that's necessary?
So we had a little bit of a discussion about that. And certainly the warehouse portion of the lower floor could be transitioned into something else down the line if the agency needed to do something, to do some expansion. And a separate facility could be built further back on the property, say a shop or something like that. So, yes, the warehouse could serve as an expansion area.
And then the third question I had was, this is a water, is this a water airport facing property? And if so, what side, based on this plan you're showing, is the Tongass Highway and airport waterside?
So if you can show, if you can roll up, so roll up to the top one there if you can, Robert. Thanks. So you can see Tongass Ave on the bottom there, and you can see the lobby on the footprint. And that's the entrance there coming in on Don Finney Drive, our lane.
Thank you.
Yeah, so and back behind a lot, right where Robert's cursor is right now, if you can kind of see it there, you know, you could potentially put a shop back there if you had to. Laydown area is very difficult for us. These lots really aren't that big. There may be an opportunity to acquire an additional lot that I'll talk to the board at a later date on. If we could, that would be a beneficial thing to do while the opportunity exists, because once this community, this little developed area is fully developed, you'll never have that opportunity again. So, but yeah, so there's a little room for expansion, and the lobby side faces the road.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Any other questions on this one? Okay, moving along. So we got the Styx historian. This, let me grab my cover sheet. Robert, you want to take and talk on this one for a minute?
Yeah, sure. So as Trey mentioned earlier, we're working on the mesh network. That actually is important for the agency because it takes us off the internet in the digital era that we are in right now. Anytime you send any data over the World Wide Web, whether it's encrypted or not, it becomes a risk. So part of this is to utilize the mesh network that we have in place right now, upgrade our systems and get new SCADA systems out at or human machine interfaces out at Ty East One and in the office. So right now we got the Styx part of this project complete. And right now it's running parallel at both sites. So we're comparing it with the old Styx. And for next year, we anticipate moving to the next phase and completing the entire project.
Any questions for Robert on that? we've kind of had that one queued up for a while, so most people should be fairly familiar with it. The next item on page 40, there's actually 40, 41. There's two carbon dust collectors that just got pushed off into the next year. I think we've got all the parts and pieces we're ready to go together with. And that was, we had a factory rep that was going to come do the commission. And then we got on page 42, the notorious Guy Thimbles. That doesn't take any much of explanation there. Shows you how we phased that and have had that coincide with other activities to cut down on the cost. The intake gate refurbishments. Ed, if you're on the line, I'll ask you to step in here and chat on this a little bit. This is a pretty significant undertaking, and we're making good progress.
Sure, Trey. This is this will be phase two of the total HPU gate control system relocation. Phase one is complete as of 2020, and then deferred the remainder of this into 2021. So we'll start this spring and pull the gate out, replace all of the gate stems. If you remember, we pulled those out and sandblasted them a couple of years ago. They're all compromised. And then all of the gate rollers are compromised as well, those rollers on the side, the guide rollers. So those will be rebuilt. The gate will be new seals put on the gate, the face seals on it, and put a new coal tar coating on it, and then put it back into service. And that'll complete this job next year.
Thanks, Ed. Any questions for Ed on this? Any volunteers want to come up and work on it? Yeah, I don't see anybody raising their hand. that's a brutal one there. All right, partial discharge monitoring. You know, I talk about the 4R plan and learning more about our equipment and time, trying to zero in on the timing of replacements rather than just industry standard, if you will. This is one of those tools that'll give you the opportunity to observe when things are starting to, the insulation starting to break down and you're starting to get some more leakage, and you can be a little bit time your outages for refurbishment appropriately. So I think we've talked about that quite a bit, and I think we just have a little bit left on this one. Yeah, we got the final commissioning, and that they're coming out of Canada, right? I think.
Yeah. Been the issue with two of the projects this year is COVID and travel restrictions between Canada and the United States.
Yeah, so we're just waiting to get that done. So we're all queued up. That's going to get wrapped up here shortly, hopefully. Next item on page 46. I think. Yeah. And this is essentially a spillway recovery davit system. And hoping to get that installed as soon as we can in 2021. So if we have somebody get injured down on the spillway, we have a way of retrieving them. Stationary winch. This project, Ed, you want to talk about this just a little bit?
Sure, Trey. So this was in last year's budget. I missed the quote on this thing miserably. I think I had $10,000. For this, and when I got into designing it and talking to the manufacturers, there's nothing on the market that met our particular needs, so we're going to have it custom built. That drove the cost up significantly. So this is going to be staged at the backside of the reservoir. There's a couple acres of flat ground at the 350 foot elevation that we can use to drag the debris up on, bucket up, and burn it at our convenience. It's part of all the mitigation plan for the debris, the two booms went in place. Everything now will be taken to this site to be bucked up and burned instead of going to the dam, putting it in trucks, taking it to another staging area. It eliminates two transfers, essentially. So, any questions?
It might roll, Robert, roll down to the next page there. There you go. You can see the buck up area there that we're that Ed's talking about. I think the lower box there. You see the upper box is the man the dam, and the lower box would be the area where this the trees are going to be bucked up there at the site. So, and that'd be upstream of the log booms.
It's essentially the only spot on the whole reservoir where there's any kind of usable real estate for this purpose.
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Yes, go ahead.
So is this basically a floating barge that you guys pull to that area and then that way?
No, Jeremy, this is just a steel skid and that winch. So you're looking at a, 10-foot long skid with a winch mounted on the front. It's an electric winch with a generator that runs it. And it's a steel skid that's designed to be maneuvered around with its own power. So you'll drag the winch out, tie it to a dead man tail hold, and then drag the winch to where you want it, and then secure it to the tail hold to pull the logs up the other direction.
How are you going to get this skid winch to that location?
That we're going to have to build a log raft to get it there. So we'll build a log raft. We've actually already have one assembled out there. We'll drag it over there and take the excavator and lower it down onto that, take it to the site, and the winch will skid itself off of the raft and up to the site.
And then you guys will end up leaving this apparatus at that site long term?
That thing's going to live there till it rots to the ground.
Roger that. All right, thank you.
Yep.
Thanks, Ed. So the next item is on page 49, and there was an updated version of this that was distributed to the board. Robert, do you have a copy of that updated one? There you go. You want to go ahead and speak to this one, Robert?
Yeah, sure. Transformer differential relays at Bailey, they're original equipment, and they haven't been tested in a few years. But they're definitely at the end of their life at 35 years old. Most all the rest of SEPA's fleet has been converted to the digital Schweitzer-type multifunction relays. This is locations that haven't been converted yet. So this project was originally, we got the design done this year, and we intended on possibly doing that install in-house. But given the fact that this requires it to be, the work to be performed during an outage, we're going to be pretty tight on our window next year. So we went out and got a quote for this project, and it came in obviously more expensive than we could have done it, but at $20,000, that would be the difference in the increase in cost from last year versus this year. So a total of $43,000. I think the last budget was 20, somewhere around there, 23. Yeah, 22. So that's all I got on that one, Trey.
Thank you. That brings us to page 50, and this is the sub cable. We've probably talked in this one to nauseam, but gives you the highlights here and what the total cost of the project is. There is some project contingency in there and some SEPA related expense as well. And hopefully we can stay on budget and we get a cooperative weather window. That takes us to page 51. and the start of the new project. And, you know, Ed, I'll ask you to give an update on this and kind of where we're at and what we're thinking. And if I need to, I'll jump in and add a little bit.
All right. Yes. So if you guys have read through this, you see that the bunkhouse has got some major rot damage. The whole southeast side of the building has had water intrusion. Unfortunately, there was a shed roof that was attached to this building many years ago by staff, and it wasn't put or assembled correctly. And what it did is let water go through between the siding and the roof, and it went through the walls. And so the whole lower section of the wall is gone on the north side, as well as the floor joists in the public restroom areas for certain. I can tell that just by walking in there. We haven't done any exploratory tear down. On top of that, you know, these are 37-year-old buildings. The windows are all needing to be replaced. The doors need to be replaced. The counters need to be replaced. These were modular buildings that were not quality structures to begin with. There's a lot of press board in the buildings that with moisture, that stuff is just disintegrating. And then the outside siding on the whole structure too is just T111 as it is with the homes. And it got to a point looking at, do we refurbish these just as we did with House 102, if you remember last year with the fourplex. The cost of refurbishing runs right up there at 65 or 70% of replacement. And that's where I came with this too. And I just, it makes more sense to replace them. Now you got another structure that's a 50 or 60 year structure, which is way far superior quality than what we have there right now anyway. So that's what this is. The thought is to remove both of the existing single occupancy homes that are left out at the structure. We have two or one extra one right now in the new fourplex. We would utilize that, put one more single occupancy apartment in this new structure, and the rest of it would end up being the contractor's bunkhouse. And then the three remaining 37-year-old facilities would go away. So that we would end up with the fourplex and this particular structure and decrease our maintenance significantly overall with less square footage and still have the same coverage as far as beds. The square footage obviously is decreased, but the bunkhouse was really, it was never designed as a bunkhouse. It was a five bedroom home that was utilized as a bunkhouse. So there's a lot of poorly designed living spaces in it that are unutilized. And what I did is just took the needs of the bunkhouse and put them into a smaller footprint. So that's what you're looking at here. Any questions?
Thanks, Ed. And like I said before, it's really at end of life. It's you're to the point where you're going to put more money in it than it's really. It's appropriate to do a replacement this time, and that's the direction we're recommending to the board. Okay, so that brings us on to our next item, the equipment trailer. Ed, you might as well just keep talking.
All right. So Trey kind of alluded to this earlier about our lack of staging area and warehouse area. Well, this is one thing that we have no means. We have no way to move freight. So everything that comes in from our marine transfer stations here in town, the barge terminals, I have to round up a private contractor, get them to move it to their warehouse, get them to move it out of their warehouse, coordinate back with the drive down dock with the harbor master. This is going to enable us to at least go get the things that can stay outside from the barge terminals, take it to our new lot, and we at least have some control of our of the transferring process out to the plant. Any questions?
All right, thanks, Ed. Moving to the fiber build-out on page 55. Robert, you want to speak to that one, please?
Sure. We've got a pole attachment agreement with GCI in both Petersburg and Wrangell. Part of that pole attachment agreement is that GCI would provide the SEPA organization with four T1 connections between Petersburg, Wrangell, and Ketchikan. This project is to make that go from tuition to fruition, and with the new connections between the three cities at each site to include Petersburg substation, Wrangell substation, Wrangell switchyard, and Ketchikan main headquarters, we'll be able to get the fiber, get the SCADA system on the fiber backbone dedicated just to those sites. Again, part of that discussion we had about the mesh network, Swan Lake and Tai SCADA is now dedicated and not on, or will be dedicated and not on the World Wide Web. And same thing with the Petersburg, Wrangell, and Ketchikan main headquarters SCADA network. So that's the intent of this. Increased security, utilizing an existing contract we already have, and and hopefully we can get that work done here in the first quarter of next fiscal year.
Hey, Robert, this is Joel. I just had a question on this. So we're moving off the T1s that they had offered onto our own fiber link. Is that it?
Well, so T1s is really not the way they do things anymore, because you have trunks now with, you know, hundreds and hundreds of fiber connections in there. So what they are effectively will be doing is providing us dedicated, our own dedicated network with four T1s worth of bandwidth. Is that will be the end goal.
Any follow-up questions? Okay. Moving on to page 56. And this has to do with flashboard de-icing and essentially automating it. There's a hazard there if we get ice buildup on the lip of where the flashboards are at. And this is to automate that. And you have anything you want to add to that, Ed?
No, that's essentially it. When we installed this, this was kind of a last, the VOC, the Board of Consultants, threw this in towards the very tail end of the project. So it was kind of, we tried to do it as inexpensively as we could at the time, and so we just did it analog. So it's on a mechanical timer, so the guys have to actually watch the temperature. If the elevation of the reservoir is above 330 and the temperature is below 32, then they go up and start it up, and the compressor cycles on a mechanical timer. I'm trying to get the human interaction in this out of the way. It's just too much risk.
Any questions?
So, Trey, to add, so is this just a mechanical oscillation to keep the sheet ice from forming up into a big thick pile of ice? Is that what it's doing?
It's to keep the ice from forming against the flashboard gates. Those flashboard gates are just resting in there, right? They're not bolted to anything. That's all a moving piece. They're held in there with cables. If the ice was to affix to it and then the reservoir raised it all, it would just lift these things out and the whole thing would collapse. The flashboards. Follow me?
Okay, and so that bar that goes across there just raises up and down, is that what it does?
No, that bar is just nothing but a 3-inch piece of stainless steel pipe with holes drilled in it, and the compressor just pushes warm air through it. It's a screw-type compressor that's pushing out like 80-degree water or air out through that pipe. Just keeps the water warmed up.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on to page 57. And we've got, this one's pretty straight up. We got some damaged guardrail out there and might as well get it repaired. Need to have somebody go over the side because we had a guardrail that was already damaged. And goal here is to make it more visible. And, you know, this has got damaged over the years from people, removing snow if it was really deep and maybe didn't see it. And we'll put some additional indicators higher up so people can see it and hopefully don't damage it in the future.
Yeah, try to add one more thing. Most of this damage occurred when we had a track snow removal vehicle out there. Mm-hmm. And track vehicles moving snow on steep grades is not good. So...
They like to slide sideways.
When the snow got deep, people crawled over the top of the. That's what caused all this damage. Is that track machine? But it won't occur anymore. That piece of equipment is no longer on site.
Great. Thanks for the history there, a little bit. Okay, that takes us to page 59. On the lighting, these are just some continuous upgrades we're trying to do to lower our energy footprint and save consumption that we can sell to somebody else. So just makes sense to convert to LEDs wherever we can and to do it as efficiently as possible. Any questions on that?
Okay. So, Trey, one of the, I guess, emergency measures you got out there is if you had somebody injured, you could do helicopter medevacs. Do you have a lighting system for helicopters out there if we're going to do some stuff? Is there any dedicated platform for that, or do you have floodlights for an area?
Clay, if you're on the line, maybe you can talk to that a little bit more on the specifics of what the history is and where they land choppers out there. I know they, when I've flown out there, they land over by the fuel tanks typically, but I'm not sure about a lighted area.
Yeah, we do not have a lighted area for night ops for either fixed wing or rotorcraft out there. Typically, if it was a night type operation like that, that was something that the Coast Guard would undertake, and they're uniquely set up for that kind of thing. They do transit the area on occasion, so they're kind of familiar with where we're at there, and they have made landings in the past, and so in all likelihood, they would be shooting for a particular GPS spot on the map, arrive at that location. We may illuminate that with headlights of a pickup truck or something like that, just to aid them a little bit. But primarily they would be working off of their own searchlights to come in and do the landing. And they would do that out by the airstrip, not in closer to where the buildings and stuff were. They'd do that out there in the open where they had a lot of room to maneuver.
Any follow-up there, Bob, at all?
Answers my question. Thank you, Trey.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's something to thanks for bringing it up. I mean, it's something maybe we look at in a subsequent year, put in a designated area. I don't think we need a certified pad because they're pretty expensive to get certified and update, but you know, we could certainly make an improvement there. All right. That brings us to page 60. And there's some good pictures there of the updated fourplex that was installed. And there, the fourth unit there, we didn't finish that out. We weren't for a couple of reasons. We're proposing to go ahead and finish that out now. And since it's over our threshold, we actually put it in as an R&R project. And maybe, Ed, you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, at the time when we built this, we didn't see the need for having a living space out of this. So it was going to be a conference area and a training room. But with this new bunkhouse concept that I've put forth earlier, that additional housing will be needed. So we'll utilize all four of these and then the one in the new structure. And just for reference, that new bunkhouse would look identical to this one. Same footprint on the outside. So there'd be two of these structures residing side by side.
Thanks, Ed. Moving on to page 61, that takes us to the PRV valves. You want to speak to this a little bit, Clay?
Absolutely. So this is where the plant in general and the housing quarters and everything, point of origin for the water, potable water, as well as our cooling water loop for the plant there. And these are original to the structure and pretty well dated now. The crew went through and rebuilt these this season with the what we had remaining on the shelf for rebuild kits. But internally, they're starting to show some pretty serious wear and erosion. And they are no longer supported by the industry anymore. That was the last of the rebuild kits, and we can't get any more. So anyway, we've looked into as close to a direct replacement as we can. And so what you see here is a breakdown of what it's going to take to do that replacement. Any questions? Basically okay. Taking 660 PSI penstock water and ramping that down to 90 PSI where it won't blow the water mains and stuff inside the plant apart. So it's pretty important component in the plant there.
Thanks, Clay. Yep. Takes us to page 62. Real-time automation controller, RTAC, which is an acronym we use, and in the Ketchikan office. And Robert, I'll let you go ahead and speak to that one if you would, please.
Yeah, part of the transition between the O&M transition from Swan Lake or at Swan Lake, we decided that we share SCADA points between KPU and SEPA. So there are some SCADA points KPU would share with us and some points that we'll share with them. Existing, we have some points that we're sharing out at Swan Lake through what's called an Orion system. And when we did our cybersecurity audit in 2019, they had identified that one as being a potential risk in the future. We've taken some measures to secure that device up, but it's still is of concern. So this project will hit two birds, one stone. It will satisfy our agreement with KPU and at the same time increase security.
Any questions for Robert? Okay. That brings us to page 63. And I think that's the last of our new R&R projects. And this one's a pretty important one. I'll let Robert speak to it, but it does lead to essentially a life extension. So,
yeah, absolutely. That is true. We've got a lot of assets here with a lot of value, a lot of replacement value. And so as Trey's mentioned earlier, we in 2021, this upcoming fiscal year, we plan on doing a 4R plan to identify when is the right time to make replacements, you know, by trying to further identify the life of the assets that we have and when the end of that life would occur. This is an area, the transformer refurbishment in at Bailey and Swan Lake, where we have done recent oil testing that confirmed that the transformers are really in excellent condition. If we do, you know, some minor maintenance, this is at the, you know, obviously again, 35 years. So replacing the seals, replacing bushings, basically giving them a tune-up, if you will, so that, you know, the expected life of 40 years may actually reach 60.
Well, that's all good stuff. Any further questions on the R&R or any other aspect of the budget we've gone over?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, this is Torin Peters.
Go ahead, Torin.
Yeah, sorry, I missed the opportunity there about the submarine cable, but I was just wondering, I had a chance to look back at the board pack, and on page 8, it looked like you have a timeline for like installation and I guess when it's supposed to arrive in the U.S. and everything. And I was just wondering, my understanding before was that I thought it was going to arrive May or June with a more timeline. And I was just wondering what the, I see it looks like it's been adjusted back a little bit. And I was just wondering what the change was on that.
Yeah, so these guys don't go to production on the cable till they get a notice to proceed. And this is one of the parts I was alluding to. I was a little aggravated how long it was taking to get some of these finite details done. We're obviously encouraging them to, you know, try to shorten their production timeline. You know, they've got a fairly long duration there, and I got to think they got a little bit of excess built into their schedule. So I'm hoping they can make the delivery earlier, but that's the reason why.
Yeah, because I guess I'll follow up, you know, just weather once – you know, June weather, you're pretty safe, and we were talking here. September, it gets dicey, and by October, it's really a risk. And especially if we're doing, you know, we took on that responsibility to lower the cost, I guess, of the, you know, we're paying the full day rate. So the sooner it gets done towards summer, the better for sure. Just, I'm sure everyone's aware of that, but just put it out there.
We agree 1,000%. And we remind them of that every time we talk to them, that, hey, you guys are absorbing some risk here too, because if for some reason you damage the cable because you got blown off of your spot or something, you know, that could impact the project on their side. So, yes, we've been emphasizing that risk, but astute point. Back to you, Mr. Chair.
Is there any other questions from the board on the budget?
We do need an amendment for that R&R that we changed the value of. Robert, I sent you an email if you want to bring that up.
Yeah, hold tight here. Suggested motion. Is that what you're?
Yes.
Okay, so it's in the email form, but I can put that on the screen here if everyone can see it.
Yeah. Well, they could also just amend the budget as presented and amended since they made that one amendment to it. So.
Yeah, hold on. Let me get this thing popped out.
I think that overall cost is going to change, Kay, because they took the 2% out too. Did you incorporate that in there?
Mm-hmm. No, because that motion has already passed. This is just to amend the R&R budget.
I got you. Yeah. All right. Yeah, I moved them.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Bob.
I move to amend the fiscal year 2021 R&R capital budget by increasing the budget item RR20346 by $21,320.
I'll second Thank that. You.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion at that at all? Hearing none, Sharon, would you please call a roll?
I will. Severson?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Lynn?
Yes.
Prysanka?
Yes.
Amelon?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. That leaves us with the budget as amended. Sharon, would you call roll on the budget as amended?
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead. Hold on.
So I just wanted to confirm. So we're voting on the rate as well.
Okay. Trey, did you catch that question?
We're voting on the whole list of items. I think there were six in the motion. That includes the rate, maintaining the rate.
Okay. Yeah. And I think, you know, we've already had a, if I could here, we had a discussion, I guess, on maybe a brief possible option, I think at the part of the beginning of the meeting. But, you know, looking, I guess I had a chance to look at the 4R plan a little bit more. And specifically, I guess, the cable, you know, this cable in the 4R plan is scheduled to, based on its lifespan, you know, be replaced in 2034. And so just looking at that, we're 14 years ahead of schedule on replacing that. So an asset, you know, that should have lasted us 14 more years, we're budgeted with that, is failing us now. And with all, you know, hopefully this will be the only one and the others will last another 14 years. But looking at that, in addition to that, the four cables were supposed to cost us $35 million, according to the 4R estimate. And now it's looking like it's going to be 11.7. You know, we'll see what it ends up finally being, but that's a good estimate for now. So looking at that and forecasting, granted, this is one of the longer cables, but if you, you know, multiply that out by four, including inflation, it's more likely to cost $45 million for the four cable insulation replacement. And so looking at that, I was, you know, figuring that's another $10 million that isn't budgeted in the 4R. And so that changes the whole dynamics of it. And if you break that down to a yearly amount, basically $10 million over the next 14 years, that's $700,000 more that we're expected to come up with now. And so just looking at that, along with a couple other things, as I mentioned earlier, the depreciation, you know, $4 million we're depreciating a year. So that's not accounted for in inflation. You know, those are prior purchases. So if you figure $4 million that we're depreciating every year, that means we need to put at least $4 million in capital back in to just keep those assets up. And like I say, that doesn't include inflation and the fact that it sounds like capital expenditures are 115% above inflation. So, you know, basically 4%, it would be a good guess per year. So with this discussion about keeping the rate or, you know, looking at the numbers, to me, it looks like also included in all this, I guess, is the new Ketchikan building, $2.7 million. And if Trey, you could qualify, I don't believe the new bunkhouse at Swan Lake is included in the 4R, is it?
No, I don't recall that it is. Okay. But it's included in the capital improvement plan for the next 2 years.
Okay. And also... Go ahead.
I was just going to mention that in the past, historically, there's always been a few projects that weren't even listed in the 4R plan that, you know, we just came across that nobody even had thought of to put in the plan originally.
Gotcha. And so I guess, yeah, looking at those expenditures again, like the bunkhouse is $2.7 million in additional revenue we need to come up with. And looking at those along with, you know, if we just budget, you know, if we just bond for these items, basically if you have a asset that's like a 20-year lifespan, you bond for it, you split the difference. We'll end up paying half of it in 10 years. And then, so basically, like I said before, I have an issue with just delaying these payments, so bonding for things. And as we talked about before, I think in 2034, I believe, they were expected to bond for $10 million, and then I'll have to double check the year too. But when the Then I think at one point we're bonding for almost $100 million. So looking at those, all these numbers, I guess, in taken together, make me a little nervous that aren't already behind on maybe, I guess, the assumption that if we just make our levelized payments every month or every year, the $2.552 million, it's looking like that might not be enough based on the 4R assumptions. And I think we maybe need to relook at those assumptions and see if we need to bump that up in order to make these meet these obligations.
Yes, so the large expenditures that you're referencing there toward especially the $100 million for the transmission, within the 4R plan, it does mention that's conceived to be funded through a bonding effort, not as part as the levelized payment calculation.
Yeah, understood. And
just to kind of round that out just a little bit, so people don't leave with that big number in their head. That's one area that we're doing poll testing and trying to do a little bit more surgical approach in the future on how we do life extensions on that line, perhaps just replace portions of it at a time. So the member utilities ratepayers ultimately don't get hit with a big one-time charge. So that's going to be part of the exercise in updating the 4R plan this year is trying to put some real numbers and timing and stuff to that. And of course we'll get better at that every year as we go along and collect more data. But certainly that's the objective. And I think that's the current flaw with the 4R plan is that, you know, when they originally put it together, they had to base it. They didn't have anything to base it off. They didn't have any history for the line itself. So they just use industry standard as a rule of thumb when they first put that together.
And so just as a follow-up, like I say, if the cables end up costing $10 million more than we budgeted, it looks like we need to put $700,000 away a year in order to cover that gap. And right now we're basically break even, you know, revenue and expenses, you know, we're basically right there. And so looking at that, you know, it looks like we already need to be making that investment to me.
Well, I guess I'll just add the submarine cables. So those also were estimated lifetime assessments and, you know, oftentimes they'll last longer. It just depends on the application. And so that's why we started doing the assessments here back in 2019 to get some type of indication what the current condition of the cable is. We run it at 69 kV. The current fluid-filled cables are 138 kV, so they're underloaded. And for the most part, most of them are in silt, so they're fairly protected. But you know, there's still some these suspensions where they have essentially an underwater span that kind of goes over a rock surface and then has a belly to it and then goes to the next touch point. We are seeing some buildup on some of those larger spans of sea life, and we may have to do some proactive cleaning of those or something in the future as well to try to prolong the life of them. So, yeah, there's some unknowns there.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead. Is that Jeremy?
Yes, sir. Trey, correct me if I'm wrong, Nick, or when you guys get completed with your 4R plan as far as a review and update, a lot of these future projections and a lot of these issues that we might be facing will become more clear for future boards. Is that correct? Yes?
That's the objective. And so you know, that's why we've started the poll testing program. That's why we did the submarine cable survey. And that's why we're putting in the partial discharge testing. That's why we're doing the transformer testing. So we've got a whole bunch of areas that we are continuing to collect data on. And as they approach end of life, or at least through their aging process, we hope to have better, more real-time information rather than just basing our assumptions off of industry standards.
Thank you, sir.
If I could touch on one more thing.
Go ahead, Tor.
I talked briefly about the role of the self-insurance insured fund earlier, and looking at the cost of this, I think we're in agreement that we need to increase it anyway to cover this. And anyway, that'd be around $12 million or so. And so I was wondering where that plays into this, because if, like I say, if our revenue and expenses are flatlined, you know, we need to come up with another $4 million just to replenish the self-insured fund. And then going along with that, I was asking what the role of it is, because in the 4R, it says the total amount of the funds from the self-insured and the R&R fund could be used to fund the R&R costs in any particular year, as long as the self-insured risk fund was restored to its minimum balance in a reasonable amount of time. And so our discussion now is bonding for the submarine cable, but I'm wondering if the self-insured fund's role is to pay for these expenses as they come up and then be replenished, how are we going to come up with the funds to replenish the self-insured fund?
So right now, if we dip into the self-insured risk fund to make the interim milestone payments, you know, we would be looking to replenish those funds through the bonding mechanism. There's also some ability to fund, increase the amount of funds in the self-insured risk fund over time. As mentioned before, you know, our revenues do have a broad range where they can swing as much as $3 million in a year. So if for some reason we have robust sales in a year, the board could consider taking any excess revenue that year and feeding it into the self-insured risk fund to increase those balances over time. It won't happen in a year or two, but it'll take a few years to build that up.
Other questions? Tor, did that answer your question?
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. Other questions? Okay, Robert.
Process question. So if we wanted an option to change the wholesale power rate, say mid-year sometime, is this the appropriate motion to make at this time? Or, I mean, just I was just wondering what it takes to, if we want to revisit it in the middle of the year and change it like a quarter of a percent or half a percent.
It's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, Joel, that the board can call a meeting at any time and make a rate adjustment to address any revenue or anticipated revenue shortfalls.
Yeah, it's the province of the board of directors to set rates.
Okay, so we could put this on our agenda for a June meeting and address it again.
Yes, sir.
Okay, want to make that clear. Thanks.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Sharon, I'd ask you to call roll on the budget as amended for 2021.
I will. Lynn?
Yes.
Prysanka?
Yes.
Amelon?
Yes.
Severson?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now, before I move on to the next one, I have a note here that from one of the board members asking, would the board consider allowing Trey to take, let's say, $10,000 out of the 2020 budget for year-end employee recognition and do it at his discretion?
Just a process question. Should that not come forward as a motion? I mean, is that a motion, and who's it from?
Somebody would have to make it. I just lay it out there for the time being, Steve. because I can't make it. But it was a discussion, and as I say, I got a note, so I just put it on the table to see if somebody wanted to do that or if there wanted to be some follow-up.
Well, I'm just asking Sharon maybe for process. Okay, I'll leave it alone. You go ahead, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Well, Sharon, I'll ask you, is it appropriate and can we do it at this point, or does that have to be done at a later time?
I don't see why it can't be done at this point. It's a 2020 budget item. Joel, do you see an issue with it? It's not a 2021 item. It's
once we move through all the budget items that are before us, and after that has been approved, then this can be a separate motion made at the request of the board. Yes. And direction.
Yes, we've gone through all the 2021, so.
Okay. If the floor is open, someone can make a motion.
And it's open. If somebody doesn't want to, that's okay. But I had to throw it out there.
Well, can I just ask whoever, I'm just surprised somebody isn't making a motion and it's going through a note to the chair.
Well, I'm going to leave it at that, Steve, and I'll not disclose the other part. But at any rate, it's an option there. It's available. And if somebody would like to do it, at the next meeting, we could.
Well, I'm willing to make the motion. I'm sorry, I'm just a bit confused, and I apologize. Are they saying in the 2020 budget, or are they saying in the 2021 budget?
I said 2020 budget.
The current budget, somebody is suggesting that under the current budget, we authorize Trey to do a $10,000 bonus, to have available $10,000 to provide in bonuses.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, I will move that the board authorizes Trey to make available for staff $10,000 to be allocated as he sees fit for bonuses for the staff out of the 2020 budget.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. All right, discussion. And Trey, would you like to jump in there and add any comments you might on that?
I appreciate the consideration, and it would give me a little flexibility, at least to recognize the performance over the last 18 months.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
This is Carl in Petersburg. Just like to say that from my perspective in Petersburg, the work that the staff did this year was just outstanding. And I think this is a good motion to be able to recognize those staff members for a job well done.
Okay. Thank you, Carl.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Steve.
I will echo the sentiments of my colleague in Petersburg, and I really feel again that it's important that people understand a couple of things, because I know this is a matter of optics. So to be really clear, our staff do not receive overtime except for administrative assistant. Our staff do not receive overtime. We did a merger of our accounting system. We've had multiple projects. They have worked really hard this past year and above and above beyond the call of duty. And so they received no overtime for that. And number two, they've not received any wage increase in 14 or 16 months. I'm not sure what the exact is. Trey, was it 14 or 16, did you say?
18
months. So I just want to be really clear. This is not an unreasonable thing for us to do. So I'm in support of this.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. Other comments? Sharon, would you please call roll on the...
Amelon?
No.
Severson?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Lynn?
Yes.
Prysanka?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, motion passes. With that, I'll move to the other item. The last item, I believe, on this part of the budget is consideration approval of SEPA's fiscal year 2021 operations plan on page 70. Is a motion?
So moved. Eggerman. I'm sorry. I move to approve the 2021 SEPA operations plan as presented in the December 10th, 2020 board packet.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. And with that, Trey, I'll turn it over to you and Robert.
Your Honor. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Yes, go ahead.
Is it possible we could request a 5-minute break before we go into the operations plan, sir?
We could do that. We could very well do that. Let's take a 5-minute break and come back at 4:20.
Thank you, sir.
20 of. Should we call it back? Should we call it back in? And Sharon, do we have everybody back online?
I'm not sure Sharon's back online yet.
Okay.
Everybody except Sharon. Remember those old Wilson skits? Here come the judge.
Sorry.
I was
talking on mute. I apologize, Mr. Chair. The recorder was on as soon as you started speaking. So the recorder picked it all up. I was trying to tell you. Yes, it looks like there's enough available and present to proceed.
All righty. What should we go ahead? Trey, I think it's to you now. And sure. And Rob.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So the ops plans, I'll say it's, you know, there's a lot of meat in here, but most folks on the board should be pretty familiar with this. So I'm going to ask Robert to roll through it. And we'll hit the high points that really the nuts and bolts are at the end there, you know, draft limits and curtailment. I think those are the points that the board's most concerned about. But anyway, take your time and ask as many questions as you need to. We'll take as long as it takes. Over to you, Robert.
Okay. Appreciate it, Trey. And before we start, I'd like to thank the board for consideration of that last motion. I think it means a lot to the employees here. Regardless of compensation, it is about appreciation. And we work really hard and we want to continue to do so, and we will. This next year is going to be probably twice as busy as last year, so I just want to say thank you. Moving on to the ops plan, I'm going to try and make this fairly straightforward and quick in light of today's meeting being pretty cramped and a lot to talk about in one session in one day. So I'm really going to focus on a few larger topics. Our predicted inflows for next year, and that comes from forecasting of weather patterns. And then I'd like to discuss draft limits and things that the board typically approves. So moving on, section one, we've talked about that in February, when we do get new board members on, we'll go through a more detailed presentation on how this is developed. I think everybody on this call here today pretty much understands how we develop our operations plan, and so I'm just going to kind of